Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, July the 19th, and welcome to our commentary. You know, as I mentioned yesterday, and I'll mention again tomorrow when we actually celebrate the anniversary of the landing on the moon or man walking on the moon, I always get excited about this week because I remember so much about Apollo 11 and the actual, I mean, I was listening to a little transistor radio, listening to the Apollo 11 taking off on the mission. Then, of course, we were following it on TV and then, of course, the actual landing. We're going to get into a lot of that on the show on the 20th, and we'll talk about what it was like to be alive. In fact, I had a post that I wrote at the American Thinker a couple of years ago where I wrote about how lucky I always felt that I was alive at that moment, how lucky I felt that I was living and able to see it all, because I can still remember my parents' faces, you know, when we were sitting there watching it on TV. And they were just like, you know, for them, they couldn't believe it. Now, of course, they had grown up in a generation where, you know, they used to read comic books about going into outer space and the moon. And so they were all excited about it. And so was I. I think everybody was. And then there have been some great articles about that Apollo 11 mission. One of the more interesting ones, and I'm going to refer to this article in my blog post that comes out on the 20th of July. And it's the one written by Charles Krauthammer. And he wrote this, he passed away, what, 5 years ago, 4 years ago? So he wrote this in one of the anniversaries of Apollo 11. And he wrote about what, you know, the name of the article is The Moon That We Left Behind. And part of what he was saying is that we never went back, to my knowledge, we never went back to Tranquility Base, which is where the Apollo 11 landed. And, you know, we didn't go back to the moon. Since 1972, we've never actually been back in the moon. I think Apollo 18 or 19 was the last mission to the moon, and that was a long time ago. So it's just a fascinating topic, and we'll get into it in more detail tomorrow, on the 20th, when we actually recall the events of that day. Well, let's talk a little bit about politics. The First Lady has been defending her husband, President Biden. Now, look, I think that's great. I think it's great for the First Lady to defend her husband. That's a natural thing to do. We all remember Mrs. Reagan and how touchy she was when anybody would criticize Ronnie, as she used to call him. So I think it's great. I think it's great that the First Lady is defending her husband. What she's basically saying is, my gosh, he inherited all these problems. My gosh, he got hit by all these problems. Look, I think that's where I take issue with the First Lady. I'm glad that she's defending her husband. That's a wonderful thing. But I take issue a little bit with her analysis. If you want to talk about being hit by problems or being hit by something, you talk about 9/11. Talk about that. How well President Bush handled that. I mean, President Bush had to restructure our entire security system in the United States because of 9/11. He did a great job, absolutely great job doing it. Then you have, of course, the pandemic that hit President Trump in March of 2020. And you can go back. You can go back and you will see that nobody was predicting what actually came. There's a lot of people who are very smart after the, you know, sort of Monday morning quarterbacks, as they like to be called. But Dr. Fauci, there's a video of Dr. Fauci in February saying, hey, this is not going to be as bad as everybody say it is. So he got hit by this, and I think he did a reasonably good job. And that takes me back to the First Lady. I think that the First Lady, I understand, again, her defense of the president. I understand that. Or her husband, I should say that. That I sympathize with. You know, a wife defending her husband, that's a good thing. But I think in this case, what has gotten her husband in trouble is not the unexpected things that happened, but the way he handled himself and the way he reversed a lot of the good things that were happening when he came in. You know, when President Biden came in, we had an energy policy that was working very well. We had a border policy that was working extremely well. We had an economy that was actually coming back naturally, coming back from, again, look at the timeline, go back to March of 2020, the American economy is doing extremely well. In fact, the American economy is doing so well in March of 2020 that all the experts, all the so-called experts, were predicting the reelection of President Trump just on the economy alone. And things were going quite well for President Trump at that time. And then, of course, you get hit by the pandemic and you got to govern in the middle of a pandemic and all kinds of things happen. But when it was passed on to Joe Biden, things were actually in a recovery. The economy was in a recovery. So what did President Biden do? Well, the first thing he does is he signs executive orders basically trying to destroy the fossil fuel industry. Well, that may sound real good in theory, but what that has meant is higher gas prices. Then they reverse what President Trump was doing on the border. Well, that has created tremendous political problems for President Biden. Then they sign other things. Then they pass this $1 trillion or whatever it was bill that was supposed to, again, help the economy. In fact, it didn't help the economy because all that it did was put a lot more cash into an economy. And that cash, of course, contributed to the inflation that we have now. So as I said before, I can understand the First Lady defending her husband. That's a natural thing to do. But I think the First Lady needs to understand that it was her husband who got himself into this political mess. Had her husband simply put the country on automatic pilot when he took over from President Trump, had he done that? Had he not touched the energy plan? Had he not touched the border plan? Had he not messed with the economy? Had he just put the country on autopilot? He'd be a heck of a lot more popular right now. And the Democrats would not be running away from him or talking about replacing him. And that takes me to my second topic today. And that is the fact that I have a post about this, by the way, at The American Thinker, talking about how the Democrats are running away from President Biden. Now the media is running away from President Biden, too, because the reality is that people are not watching TV the same way. A lot of people are turned off by the media. If you've been following the news, you know that the news media's credibility has been dropping and dropping and dropping and dropping like crazy. And, you know, half of the country doesn't even believe the news media anymore. They don't believe the news that they are getting, which is not good, because if you don't have a strong news media, what's going to happen is that well, people are going to have to get the news elsewhere, and that's dangerous because sometimes they may get the news from places that where the news is not edited and where there's an agenda behind the delivery. So, that's not good. We need a strong, independent news media. We don't have that one right now, and that's not good. That's not good for the country. Well, we are at a point right now where the news media has almost become irrelevant, which is extremely interesting for the country, and a real problem for the country, if I may say so. I mean, a real, real problem for the country. Let me just take a quick look here. I have in my notes. I want to make sure I cover this point. Yes. Okay. I did. The media is turning on President Biden. And why are they turning on President Biden? Well, a lot of it's because they feel that they have to, I guess, as journalists. But I really think what is driving all of this is that the media has gotten bored with President Biden. I think they're looking at President Biden and they're saying, you know, this guy is not getting us ratings. You know, they didn't like Trump. I know that. But Trump got him ratings because Trump was the kind of guy that the media would love to cover. And Biden is not that kind of guy. I think one of the things that I post today at the American Thinker in my post is that the biggest mistake that the American news media made in 2020 was in their obsession, their hysterical obsession with President Trump, and just focusing extremely, almost to the point of hysterical obsession. You've heard, you know, the idea of Trump derangement syndrome. Well, that is what we had on the part of many reporters who just couldn't get enough of Trump. They simply could not get enough of President Trump. Let me move my notes over here. I think it's a little bit easier to follow it if I've got it over here. But the media in their obsession of just being hysterically obsessed with Trump they didn't cover President Biden. And that's becoming more and more obvious. You know, this journalist, Glenn Greenwald, is writing about this, that it's becoming more and more obvious that if we in 2020, if the media in 2020 had forced Joe Biden to get out of the basement and go out there and campaign the way most candidates have to campaign, if they had done that, I think we would have seen in the fall of 2020 a lot of what we're seeing now with President Biden, which is a man who is not coherent, who basically has to read everything. He doesn't seem to have the ability to handle questions, and everything has to be written out for him. And that's, again, that's not the kind of man you want to have in the president of the United States. So the media is clearly turning on President Biden. The Democrats are turning on President Biden because obviously they're going to take a beating in the fall. If things don't change dramatically, you're looking at the Republicans winning the House, likely winning the Senate, and a President Biden who's going to be politically castrated. I mean, he's not going to have anything to do because he won't have the ability to do anything. He'll write executive orders, but they're worthless because they will be challenged in the courts, and the orders will be sent right back to him by the court. So, you know, the Democrats understand that. They understand that they're about to go into the wilderness because of the Biden presidency. So they're frustrated about it, but they don't know what to do with Biden because we don't have any way of replacing a president. We cannot do a confidence vote, as happens in other countries. You know, some of the parliamentary systems like Canada and the UK, you know, they have the so-called confidence vote where they can actually vote, get you out on a confidence vote. We don't have that. Now, for years, the argument for not having that was that that way you had stability. You had a man in the White House for 4 years. And I understand that argument too. And clearly stability is important. But when you have a situation like the one that President Biden is in, you really have to wonder, you know, what is your next step? Because he doesn't look good. I hate to say it. And I doesn't really give me an, I don't get any fun of saying that. I want to make that clear. It doesn't really give me any fun of making fun or you know, somehow mocking a 78 or 79-year-old man. It doesn't give me any comfort to do that. But there's no question that as President of the United States, he probably shouldn't be on this job. And had the media done a better job of reporting on him in the fall of 2020, I think a lot of it would have come out. A lot of this would have come out, and it would have been sure. I mean, Trump would have won a close election, but nevertheless, I think he would have won. One quick note that I wanted to say here as we finish. Tuesday night is the All-Star game, the baseball All-Star game. And I'm not a big fan of the Home Run Derby. I know that was last night. I grew up watching the All-Star game. It's one of those moments in the summer that you remember. Generally, we were out of school. It used to be an afternoon game, so it was easy to watch. And, you know, I have a lot of memories of the All-Star game. But recently, I have not been as interested in the All-Star game as I used to be. Now, it could be that I don't have the personal attachment to the players that I used to have when I was younger. Maybe that's what it is. But the All-Star game is on tonight. And it's the American League versus the National League. It used to be they used to play for a home court advantage in the World Series. They don't play that anymore. And that, I think that took away a little bit of the intensity of the game as well, because you want, if you're an American leaguer, you want the American League to have home field advantage in the World Series. And right now they're just playing an exhibition game. It was always an exhibition game, I guess you could say. But it's been more of an exhibition game here in years. So I hope the American League wins because our team, the Texas Rangers, is in the American League. But I'm not going to get a chance to watch it tonight because I got to teach a class tonight. So I'll probably listen to it a little bit as I'm driving home. The All-Star game, one of the great traditions when I was growing up watching that. Thank you for listening. Thanks to all of you. Thanks to my friend Eric for joining in. And we'll talk to everybody later. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.